If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTRadio.live. You're with Mike Ryan on today's News Talk Radio. TNT. TNT.
Broadcasting from the epicenter of intelligence and culture globally, universally, on the Gold Coast. But in Australia, this is my show from Australia, tomorrow is Australia Day. Can't wait. Barbecues, couple of beers. As the Americans would say, throw a shrimp on the barbie, but we call it a prawn. And now those prawns are in our federal government. They're running the government. The raw prawns, Elbow the prawn man. Anyway, the Prime Minister Albanese, I should say. A couple of things happening. Looking at the quality of our leaders globally, the quality of our leaders, you would have to say, it's just dreadful. Former leader, former House Speaker in the US, Nancy Pelosi, attempted to rid her San Francisco house of any evil by asking Catholic priests to come and perform an exorcism following the attack on her husband. Paul Pelosi was violently attacked inside the couple's San Francisco home on October the 28th. Now, a lot of controversy around that too, by the way. A lot of questions, and not answered. Plenty asked, but none answered. The former speaker's husband suffered several injuries, requiring surgery after a man allegedly broke into the home looking for Nancy, according to a federal criminal complaint. So we've been working hard on this, our newsroom. Head down, backside up, as they say. And James O'Neill has more.
Thanks, Mike. According to sources, former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi recently recruited several Catholic priests to exorcise her home of evil spirits, and as a result has joined the Republican Party. "How could I have been so blind to the blessed truths of the Republican Party?" said Pelosi to reporters with a new light in her eyes. "After the priest spent over 14 hours casting hundreds of demons, Balrogs, and other dark entities from my home, I looked up to the heavens as though scales had fallen from my eyes and immediately converted to Republicanism. Praise be to Reagan." Priests credited their superior training in demonology for the successful exorcism. When Pelosi began to frost, sizzle, and spasm after we hit her with the holy water, we knew we had our work cut out for us, said local priest Lee Jameson. We soon realized that a full legion of left-wing demons needed to be expelled through a full exorcism ceremony. We're happy to welcome another lost soul into the Republican Party. Even though Speaker Pelosi's previously unquenchable thirst for the blood of infants slain through abortion was abated, eyewitnesses say the speaker's experience was harrowing. The speaker has recovered and is in her right mind, fully clothed and speaking coherently to former Democratic allies who had staged an intervention to reaffirm her commitment to abortion. "Chuck, abortion is murder. I'm Catholic, for goodness sake. And so are you, Joe." At publishing time, Pelosi had been going door to door to voters whose taxes she had stolen, making restitution with all that she had, and praising God for delivering her from the dark spirits of leftism.
"I smell human."
Back to you, Mike.
That was Chuck, I'm sure. I mean, the voice was too deep and too civilized, had a lot of class to it to be Nancy. She wolfs down another wine. Now, if you want to call us, don't forget, in a couple of hours' time, Nicola Charles, along with Jeremy Beck, and then Nicola, along with Rick Munn, will be accepting your calls. If you have a bit of a beef or want to talk about something that really grabs you, just give us a call. Go to our website at tntradio.live.
It's the stuff.
What citizen wouldn't want to make American great again?
People are talking about.
Vilifying MAGA, it's just not going to work.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
A lawyer for Mike Pence has reported the discovery of secret papers in the former vice president's Indiana home. Jeremy, tell us more.
Thanks, Mike. President Joe Biden may take comfort in the fact that classified documents have been found at the home of another US leader, this time former Vice President Mike Pence. A lawyer representing Pence, Greg Jacob, last week reported that the National Archives and Records Administration that a small number of papers with classified markings were discovered at the Pence home in Indiana. Jacob wrote in a letter to the National Archives and Records Administration that the find was made during a search by a legal firm that Pence hired in the wake of this month's scandal over Biden's handling of state secrets. Jacob says in a letter that the records in question were inadvertently boxed and transported to the personal home of the former vice president at the end of last administration. Vice President Pence was unaware of the existence of sensitive or classified documents at his personal residence. The FBI retrieved the documents last Thursday from a safe location in Pence's home, where they had been placed after their discovery. FBI and the Department of Justice have launched a review of the records and how they ended up at the Pence home. I don't think the saga of misplaced classified documents has ended yet, though, Mike.
No. Could you have a look in your wardrobe? I just want to see if you have any classified documents next to the whips, those ones.
I checked under my bed. They're not there.
And no Russians, just to make sure?
No.
Okay. No. Good to hear. But how in the hell can a vice president walk off with classified documents? The only one that can do that is a president, because he can declassify those. So I would think that Mike Pence, along with Joe Biden, Joe was the VP and so was Mike, they need to face the music. You cannot. It sounds like the village people. But they do not. They have to be accountable. They do not walk away with state or federal secret papers. You can't do that. I mean, where's the Secret Service?
Well, I think that a lot of processes haven't been followed correctly, because what should happen to the official White House records? Well, according to the official way that it should happen is the records are supposed to be turned over to the National Archives at the end of each administration. So they shouldn't be sitting in someone's garage or house. A lot of people have been doing the wrong thing. Certainly, I think there'd be probably others that we may see in future that will be uncovered.
Yeah, I just think it's I was thinking it was a storm in a teacup. I don't think so anymore. I think what it is highlighting, one, we have, I mean, why were those papers, removed in the first place? So I suppose we need to know what's in those papers. If it was Joe Biden and you had all stuff about Ukraine and China and around Burisma and investments that could be made, then I think it's very, very serious. However, having said that, if Mike Pence also nicked some papers, whether he meant to or not, you can't remove those from a secure a location. And I don't think his house or Joe's garage, were they found originally next to maybe Mike Pence's lawnmower?
I do know that these places are not secure, and even if it is in a home, they just haven't followed proper process. So regardless if the argument is the home is locked up and all the rest, or it has security, well, it's not the archives, it's not the White House. So why are these documents in people's homes? And it doesn't give you much confidence in government officials these days. If highly classified material could be out anywhere, who knows how much compromised information is on the loose?
What do you think will happen to Pence and Biden? Nothing?
Probably. It all depends on the deep state, I think. When someone's got to go, they'll find all sorts of dirt on them. And when they're serving a useful purpose, it all is like water off a duck's back. You know, it doesn't matter how much wrong they do, they'll find a way, this deep state, to find excuses. And I see this time and time again in politics. It seems to be who you know, not the rule of law.
Yeah, I agree. I think it places a lot more emphasis on the raid on Mar-a-Lago at Donald Trump's residence, because, I mean, if they upturned his house and there was talk about chopping his head off, hanging him from the gallows or whatever they want, whatever the Democrats led by Nancy, who no longer has any devils, Pelosi. If he is still the only one they go after, and he is the only one out of Joe Biden who was VP, and same thing with Pence, who were VP, was VP, the one that should not be charged or even looked at anymore is, of course, Donald Trump. The ones that need to be looked at are the VPs, because you are not allowed to remove classified information stroke papers from their workplace in the White House or in Washington. So I think what needs to happen is that probably they need to forget Trump, but they won't, because it's all political. So therefore, if it's all political, do they just go after Pence and leave Joe alone? If they don't go after Pence and don't go after Biden, then they can't go after Trump. So they're in a bit of a quandary here. The machinations of this backhanded deals and the workings of Washington seem to be sort of coming apart a bit. If you were Pence, what would you do?
I think I would be a bit worried, given that he was vice president. And as you say, that's the crime, really. If you are president, that's a different story. But then again, because Trump has been accused of the similar thing, maybe Pence may not be so worried, because he's got their Trump sitting there as a former person in that position. I don't think he would be as worried as if he was singled out on his own. If this was just all about Pence, and you hadn't had the previous two scandals, Pence would be very worried. I don't think he would be quite as worried right now. It may wash over. They might find someone else. But it's going to make it, as you say, very hard to go after Trump as they were originally doing.
Yeah, I think so too. And Pence and Trump aren't best of buddies either. I mean, Pence has been quite critical of Donald Trump. Shame on him. Jeremy Beck, thank you very much. Look, I look forward to your show this afternoon. You're a man of many talents, and now you're doing callbacks and talkbacks and open line. You're just fantastic. Keep it up. Jeremy Beck, thank you very much. This is TNT Radio.
Jeremy Nell on TNT Radio.
I was a late bloomer. I think it was around November, December 2020. I'd watched a documentary. It was one of the very first sort of Great Reset type docies that, you know, to come out. I remember walking down the stairs and I asked my wife, what if this virus story is not real? You know, because it doesn't seem to have taken off, you know, in terms of deaths, and the numbers were just not matching up. And there was just this excessive amount of advertising going on, from billboards and airports to the radio, everybody just telling us to be scared. And it just made no sense to me.
That's exactly the feeling, was the complete mismatch from what you were seeing outside on the streets versus what you were being told. And I remember being a doctor, I was still practicing at that time. I would talk to people in the hospital, nurses, and I knew people that were looking after the very first COVID cases in New Zealand. And I knew that they all had end-stage dementia. They were all going to die anyway, and realizing, well, this doesn't really make sense. And the out of proportion responses from the staff at the hospital of what we're going to do when this pandemic arrives, you know, I'm like, well, how can you prepare for something like this? This seems impossible to me.
Jeremy Nell and Germ Warfare on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Wokeness is infiltrating churches, and people don't really know what's hitting them.
Critical race theory assumes that racism is everywhere, it is in everything. These ideologies have crept into the church.
I have grown up with this invisible kind of bag of privilege.
And I know, as a white pastor, I have blind spots.
Reparations fits into the scope of the gospel.
It's a racist worldview. You're swimming in reason.
The social justice warriors say, if you're white, you are racist. And if you say that you are not a racist, then you have to be a white supremacist.
I see within evangelicalism today an attack on the very gospel itself.
Social justice doesn't have to do with justice, it has to do with Marxism.
Wokeness is now the dominant academic paradigm on many university and college campuses.
Many of our Christian universities have fallen prey.
I went to an all-black school, raised in a black context. Everything was oppression. White people are racist, cops can't be trusted, and this world is not for us, it's against us. We felt like the government owed us. I have a family, I have children, and I don't have a job. I was just, it was at the darkest point in my life.
Because I was white, would we have to divorce and separate due to my skin color?
Christianity enables people to find forgiveness and redemption. However, Marxism is completely vindictive.
There is no redeemer and there is no redemption in the religion of anti-racism.
I believe that the evangelical church today is going to have to make a decision. Are we going to submit to the culture, or are we going to remain true to the faith and take the consequences?
How the left is stealing your church. The invasion of the gospel of woke at salemnow.com.
Today's News Talk Radio.
I like hearing the news.
News. A lot of news.
TNT Radio News.
Top of the hour, every hour.
TNT.
And guess what? That's not the news. Anyway, what we'll do is we'll go to our next segment. That was a bit, just came out of the blue. The Biden administration struts the world stage with plenty of swagger, despite its massive incompetence at home and abroad. Its handling of the Afghanistan pullout, the calamity of the COVID jabs, social and financial recklessness in Ukraine, and the ramifications of the XL pipeline closure and the wide-open southern border. What will be the last straw? Brian McWilliams is a native Philadelphian currently living in L.A., professionally practicing public relations with a stand-up comedy past. His passion and concern for liberty was realized during Ron Paul's 2008 campaign, which shed light on the troubling initiatives government was embracing that infringed on the principles of the US and what it was founded upon. Brian is the host and producer of Mean Age Daydream, the Lions of Liberty Network's weekly Wednesday look at current events, culture and comedy through a liberty lens. First of all, Brian, thanks for joining us.
It is a pleasure to be here. Thanks so much for having me on. And I love everything you guys are doing at TNT. So it's good to be back on two shows now. So we'll see if I can run the gamut at some point.
Two shows. I'll have to budget those out a bit, move those around. But yeah, fantastic. Thank you. Hey, why did you leave Philly? I mean, Philly's a beautiful city.
You know what? I was chasing a dream. I actually moved to Los Angeles originally to get into screenwriting, which is something I'm actually going to be refocusing on a little bit more as you know, we look now, there's a little bit of a movement away from the hyper leftist and wokeist culture that is dominated entertainment. So I think maybe now would be the time for me to strike, but that's what drew me out of Philadelphia and out to La La Land, where I can't say if it's me or just the culture, but things have gotten worse since I've gotten here. I don't want to take all the credit, but I'm not sure if it's me setting the dominoes in motion but, or Gavin Newsom that's done the most damage.
I think it's Newsom, but LA's a great place. I mean, you got some, we did a whole bunch of a little series for TV a few years ago with restaurants and stuff and business, of course, but restaurants were, you have some amazing restaurants and the culture that you discover once you start getting into LA, because people around the world think of LA as Disneyland, Santa Monica Boardwalk, maybe a bit of Venice, but not much. Where else is the other theme parks and a few margaritas and a couple of tacos, and that's about it. But it's an amazing city. I mean, even West Hollywood, just the history, the transformation there, down at Venice with the canals, you know, the history there. I mean, it's an amazing place of this melding of all sorts of cultures from around the world. And up until a couple of years ago, they generally got on okay with each other. Sort of all changed, hasn't it?
Yeah, and most definitely. It's something that, you know, seeing the downfall of what was a really beautiful city, as you said, a real emerging city of all cultures. I mean, I was joking with my wife where we went to Tokyo for a late honeymoon several years ago, and the sushi was better in Los Angeles because all of the best chefs were coming from Japan to LA. But now we've seen, because of the progressive politics taking place, because of Gavin Newsom, as I said, you know, running the state, we now see this beautiful city, the beautiful canals in Venice, where I spent the first 12 years of my life here in LA, living in Venice, now overrun just with filth, with homelessness, with drug addiction. And, you know, there is a palpable divisiveness among people. And I don't know if this goes along with the broader focus on racialism and on, you know, different people getting along and kind of looking at each other with a side eye because of the COVID pandemic. But there is a palpable dislike, I will say, in the streets where it didn't used to be this way. It used to be La La Land, where everybody came to live their dreams. And while you couldn't always trust somebody to tell you the truth and look you in the eye, and you know, when they're shaking your hand, typically people look over your shoulder to see if there's something more important in the room, you still could all get along. And to your point, that just doesn't seem to be the case any longer.
No, it doesn't. One of my two favorite haunts, they used to joke that my second office was Baja Cantina, which you'd know.
And oh my God, I know it very well.
with Big Mike behind the bar, and it's just a, it was, and it probably still is one of the great bars in the world. I used to notice, though, and I used to wonder why, then I realized that was, they wanted to see me shut up. And the margaritas would start with a color, and by the third one, it would go just clear. It would just be full of tequila. And you think it's a nice gesture, but you sort of just, a couple of those, you don't say much and you disappear. So I'm sort of thinking they wanted to get rid of me. And
well, you still have both of your kidneys, though, right? So that's really, I mean, they like you if you make it out with both your kidneys intact and not waking up in a tub full of ice.
But a fantastic place. And the other one was Canal Club, which is near North Venice. It closed for some reason. The guy decided to close it. But another great place, and that was part of the whole community, was, you know, even though it was, you know, pretty wild or left of center, it was a very safe place. And for all that to have gone, the community being a community no longer is that community. Where do you see it moving from there? I mean, does it get worse and that it goes back to the old days, you know, with the beatniks and the bikers that used to hang around, say, Venice? Or do they collectively pull together and get back to what it used to be?
I think there is a movement that I've been sensing, and this comes from, you know, my professional job, of course, is public relations. So I work with a lot of companies in the entertainment sphere. My wife works in the industry, working with a lot of large furniture installations for like Sony and Disney. So we're both talking to people that are traditionally far more on the leftist spectrum of things. And I'm, you know, even speaking with them, people are getting fed up. I think it's finally hitting a point where it's pushed so far and people are seeing that their children are not safe any longer. I have family that lives right along Venice, and they turned a dog park into a homeless facility, and they literally are scared for their child going out, can't play, can't go to the beach. The sheriffs had cleaned along Venice Boulevard, where there was the homeless encampments in place there, and found a literal dead body chopped into pieces in one of the tents that had just been sitting there. I think it's gotten to the point where people are saying enough is enough. Now, the question, of course, comes in, how is it going to be handled? Because one of the biggest problems we have in this state, and I think at large, when we talk about public response to a crisis, is that people look to government first, and they look to government and say, how are you going to fix this? And that typically comes in spending. And here we have a homeless industrial complex that is so sprawling. I mean, it's hundreds of millions of dollars a year. And yet we have a homeless population that has grown year over year by, you know, 10%. You have property values that are now going back down. You have an exodus from the state. You know, 60,000 people left California last year alone. And I think more people are looking to leave because of the high taxation combined with the filth of the city, the dangerous aspects of the city. And I think that we're finally reaching a point where people simply can't look the other way. The question is going to be, are they going to double down and say, well, let's just give the politicians more money and trust that they'll fix it? Or are they going to start to look inward and say, we need to come up with some solutions, or we need to put people forward that are going to change the way in which we handle this? And that's something where I just don't know if the people here have the mental wherewithal to acknowledge that we cannot go down that old school definition of madness in doing the same thing over and over and over again.
Mike Bonin, you're a councillor there too. But local government, he is truly appalling, but your local government should be one that is almost the conduit, the glue that keeps the community together also. Bonin just seems like a guy who wants to just destroy these beautiful, the historical parts of LA, which is basically Venice and moving towards, say, ocean, more towards Santa Monica, and even touching on Marina del Rey. How do you get rid of people like this? Because the guy is truly unhinged. I've never known someone to be so anti-local in my life.
I completely agree with you. And actually, the good news is that Mike Bonin has decided that and announced that he is not running any longer. Oh, now, God. I think this comes from, I know, trust me. And you know, it's funny. I have personal insight into this because, as I mentioned, I have family that lives in Venice. Actually, my family lives in the old Gold's Gym building that Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah, the one that Schwarzenegger. Mm. Yeah, he worked out there. So they actually bought that and renovated it. I think that they made a busy, had a large pressure campaign on him and my family was part of this out there to establish him as the definition of somebody that is selling out the community in order to combine with kind of these big businesses. Cause he was very complicit in what happened in driving out local business as well. Along Venice Boardwalk, they had forced out many of the businesses that had been there for 15, 20 years, and then they had brought in Snapchat and brought in Instagram and brought in all these other companies, these tech companies, which then took over large blocks. They patrol with private security, they'd harass the locals, and then they disappear. And of course, they had massive tax breaks to do it. Then they disappear, leaving vacancies, leading to, again, you know, a drop in privacy or a drop in property rates and ushering in this, you know, this new era of what Venice has become. So they basically forced him out, not only based on the homelessness, but also because they had pushed through this thing called a road diet, which had limited what people could do, how they could get from one place to another by basically shrinking the lanes on Venice Boulevard, on a road that runs later on called Via Marina, which runs right along the ocean. And it drove people insane. And they just said enough is enough. So fortunately, they forced him into basically saying he is not going to run again. Now, the question is the person that replaces him going to be any better? Which is always the danger that you encounter.
Yeah, it's interesting how they have people in councils or local government who really have no interest in their local jurisdiction. And you just wonder you know, where they come from, which rock they called from out under. But it's you just wonder how they get in because, you know, unless they have a great, like most politicians, great platform, and once they get in, it's amazing how amnesia sets in. And they forget the whole lot. Look, just hang in there for one second. We'll go to a quick break. And we'll come back and I'll play a couple of clips that I would like you to comment on. This is TNT Radio.
Big news, 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 news.
A story which contains more than first meets the ear.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. Beijing has blasted Washington for portraying China as a barrier to solving Africa's debt crisis, saying it's the US that's destroying the continent's economy. Germany has backflipped on its decision not to send main battle tanks to Ukraine, and former US Vice President Mike Pence has become the latest US leader to be found illegally harboring stolen classified documents in his home.
Eggs. You can fry them, scramble them, poach them, boil them, or race them on a spoon. But uncooked eggs can be a risk for food poisoning. To be safe, avoid buying dirty or cracked eggs. Always wash your hands after handling eggs. And if you're concerned, pregnant, elderly, or have a poor immune system, make sure you cook eggs until the yolk starts to firm. Or look for new pasteurized eggs. For excellent eggs, handle them safely.
The bushfire was so unpredictable, it was important to have a plan.
We stayed up to date with our phones and the radio. We knew it was coming.
I never thought it would actually happen. I'm glad we had a plan.
You have to prepare your property and your family.
Always had a plan.
We can all be bushfire ready. Do your 5-minute bushfire plan today.
Carbon monoxide is a colorless, odorless gas that can be fatal. Don't use anything indoors that burns fuel, such as gasoline-powered generators, camp stoves and lanterns, or charcoal grills. Opening doors and windows or using fans isn't enough. Have your vents and chimneys checked to make sure water heater and gas furnace exhausts aren't blocked. If you feel sick, dizzy, or weak while using a generator, get to fresh air right away. From the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
Do you have an upcoming community event, rally, march, festival, or fundraiser that could do with some free publicity? TNT Radio wants to promote it for you. Simply visit the What's On Events calendar on the TNT Radio website and submit your event details, and we'll get the word out, helping you make a difference on TNT Radio.
And my guest is Brian McWilliams. Just heard the commercial before, encouraging you to make sure that your vent is clean. I just want to know if your vent is clean.
My bed's always clean.
And the vent? And what about the vent? Is that clean too?
The vents, well, you know, that's a very good question. Well, we're having home renovations done, so, you know, they can get up there and check the vents. So that's something I'll pay professionals to do.
Oh, that's great. Well, my vent is, my doctor said it's very clean. Now, I just want to I want to play this from Scott Adams, and just tell me your thoughts.
Completely. Right. Having said as clearly as possible that the anti-vax people seem to be the winners, I want you to hear that clearly. The anti-vax people appear to be the winners. The anti-vaxxers clearly are the winners at this point, and I think it'll probably stay that way. And I don't want to put any shade on that whatsoever. They came out the best. They have the winning position. The unvaccinated have a current advantage because they feel better. The thing they're not worrying about is what I have to worry about, which is, I wonder if that vaccination 5 years from now, because really the anti-vaxxers, I think, were really just distrustful of big companies and big government. That's never wrong. It's never wrong to distrust government. It's never wrong to distrust big companies, right? So if you just took the position, let's just distrust everything the government did, well, you won. You won. You won completely. I did not end up in the right place. Agree? You would all agree with that, right? I did not end up in the right place. The right place would be natural immunity, no vaccination. You should take victory, and I should take defeat. We can agree on that, right? That my position is now the weakest, and your position has gone from the weakest to the strongest, and that we can just say that's true. The people who didn't get vaxxed are absolutely in the winning position. You win. You win. You are the winners. You are the winners. All right, let me say that part with no ambiguity. You won. You won. All of my fancy analytics got me to a bad place. All of your heuristics, don't trust these guys, it's obvious, totally worked.
So that's Scott Adams, the author and creator of Dilbert. What do you think, Brian?
Well, I mean, it is nice to hear Scott Adams eat a little crow. I'm not going to lie. I'd gone through, you know, during the Trump run, he had been very interesting to listen to, you know, his two movies theory, if you're familiar with that, about the way in which people view the world, and it's very, you know, very different movies. They're watching two completely different realities. What happened during COVID was I was entertained by what seemed to be Scott living his own theory in regards to, he talks about data and analytics, but all his data and analytics did lead him to the wrong conclusion. The problem is he's saying he doesn't throw shade at people who are anti-vaccine, yet there was something later on where he seems to intimate that we just got to our conclusion because we came to this. And by the way, just to be clear, I did get vaccinated because I had to go travel internationally, and I did have heart issues because of it. Mm-hmm. Just telling your audience that fact. But he seems to be saying that we only got to this point because of our position of don't trust the government, don't trust the government actors, don't trust crony capitalism, which is a great place to be. However, I think he's missing out on a large component in that many of us, probably most of us, were simply doing our own independent research, doing it, you know, looking into alternative sources that were not parroting the same data sources and falsified data or data coming from sources that really, at the end of the day, were either completely, you know, operating under a position of self-interest or had been so heavily influenced by government censorship that they couldn't be trusted to begin with. And not to mention that, you know, we see now data coming out from Pfizer from the trials that wasn't released involving heart effects and doing all these other things. Efficacy, they're telling us the transmission was real when now they say we didn't even test for it. So I think Scott Adams, while he is taking his rightly deserved lumps, is still not giving the credit where credit is due.
Now, like our country and like the UK and New Zealand and other Western, like most countries, politicians seem to have been affected by another disease called stupidity. New York Governor Hochul, now she won't rehire unvaxxed healthcare workers despite mandates being overturned. And she says, I don't think the answer is to have someone who comes in who is sick to be exposed to someone who can give them COVID-19. Now, the level of ignorance from Kathy Hochul on fully vaccinated spreading of COVID-2 is just amazing. According to Peter McCullough, the CDC director conceded vaccines failed in stopping transmission among vaccinated in summer of 2021. The public should demand an oversight committee on probably Governor Hochul on her public health decisions. And I'll just play you what she says.
Our healthcare systems seem in desperate need of staff right now. We've had ambulances waiting 5 hours at our local emergency rooms to unload patients. The hospitals, the nursing homes say they're waiting for DOH guidance on whether they can hire any of those workers back. What's the latest with that?
Well, we're considering all our options with respect to the litigation, so I can't comment on that. But I'll say that last year in my State of the State, we put forth a plan to help retention, also recruitment. And a lot of those programs are just unfolding out. $20 billion to bring back the healthcare system, including bonuses for existing workers, helping settle nursing strikes, which I get very involved in to make sure that patients are being cared for. It's a problem, but I don't think the answer is to have someone who comes in who's sick be exposed to someone who can give them the coronavirus, give them COVID-19. I don't know that that's the right answer. In fact, I'm pretty sure it's not. So we're exploring our options, but I think everybody who goes into a healthcare facility or a nursing home should have the assurance, and their family members should know, that we have taken all steps to protect the public health, and that includes making sure those who come in contact with them at their time of most vulnerability, when they are sick or elderly, will not pass on the virus. We lost 34 New Yorkers yesterday. We have 4,000 active cases. This has not gone away as much as we wish it would.
Couldn't there be other safety precautions, masking, other mechanisms in order to allow some of them back in? I mean, we're at crisis level here in our hospitals, and particularly in our nursing
balance.
Homes.
I truly understand the challenge and the balance, and these are never easy decisions. But I cannot put people into harm's way, because when you go into a healthcare facility, you expect that you're not going to come out sicker than you went in. I think that's something every New Yorker would expect.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
That was my bit. So which made more sense, that last bit or her? I mean, we would say a bloody idiot.
I'm astounded by the logic she puts into play here, right? I mean, this is the logic, as you said, of a true imbecile. Number one, you have the elderly population, right, which is the only really vulnerable population at this point to COVID. You've got people that are now not going to be able to get health care, that are young, that are capable, that have virtually nothing to fear from COVID, who now won't be able to get into the hospital to get life-saving care because she won't hire the very workers to come in and give them that care while paying an exorbitant amount to the workers that do stick around who did get vaccinated. I mean, you're killing off the younger generation in order to protect the older generation, in theory, from people that are not supposedly getting vaccinated. But as we've seen, natural immunity is better than the vaccine anyway. And you also have the people that are getting the vaccine, unless they're making them stay completely up to date and boosted with everything, they also shown that, you know, if you have a vaccine from way back when, it's not any more effective than just natural immunity. It is the height of virtue signaling stupidity. And on top of that, it's so puzzling, especially in New York, right, where you had the whole scandal with Cuomo and with, you know, putting with the old folks' homes and putting people in there. I mean, you'd think she'd just want to have as many people taken care of, as many New Yorkers that could potentially die, to avoid a secondary scandal of unnecessary deaths. But no, that's too much to ask. That much is obvious.
I mean, I listen to the politicians. It doesn't matter which country. Look at the UK, look at the US, look at New Zealand, Australia. They must have all had the same mother. And that mother might have been.
To quote my Bible, is that Jackal, I believe, is the father of the Antichrist, right?
That's
is that
right. All? Is. Go back, go back.
Birth from the Jackal, like omen.
You know, I was looking all day for something for Nancy. Nancy Pelosi's, you know, when in The Exorcist, when she says, go back, go back. I can't find it. I cannot find it. I've almost watched the whole film, which is still a truly creepy movie. Have you seen that movie, The Exorcist, the first one?
Oh, of course. It's been several years, but The Exorcist holds up. And you know what still scares me is the original Poltergeist, for some odd reason, just creeps. It's got, really? You know, that feeling on the back of your neck where it's just like, is there something behind the couch? I don't know. Creeps me out.
Yeah, I still wait for, you know, to watch people walking up and down the ceiling and stuff. I mean, it's but yeah, sort of films do that. And that's probably what our elitists or the political class would think about us, that we are evil creatures and they've got to, you know, control us, and it's all about control. I want to play you something after this, and it's to do with how we're changing and again, from the wishes of the political class or the elitists, how they expect us all to start changing our eating habits. Now, we've talked about that it might be happening. Now, things are happening. It's not just crickets. It's other stuff, which is even scarier, which is when you can go to McDonald's and you get maybe a cricket burger or something, I don't know, or a cockroach burger. But this is actually worse, and this is actually happening now. In fact, Singapore have adopted it, and it's just passed the regulators in the US, and it really is scary. Brian McWilliams is my guest. This is TNT Radio.
Let's get rid of 7 billion people? Did Jane Goodall really say that at the World Economic Forum?
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Jane Goodall, who made famous as an environmentalist who lived among the chimpanzees observing their behavior, may have spent too much time with the chimps, as she's now very anti-human. Here is Jane Goodall at the World Economic Forum in Davos.
We cannot hide away from human population growth. Because, you know, it underlies so many of the other problems. All these things we talk about wouldn't be a problem if there was the size of population that there was 500 years ago.
That's right. If you go back 500 years, you get a world population of about 1 billion people, or 7 billion less than our current number. Maybe if humans could live among the chimpanzees, we could reduce our carbon footprint. You've heard of the movement called the Voluntary Human Extinction Movement, profiled by the New Yorker magazine? Well, perhaps we're fast approaching the day when the word voluntary may be removed from the group's title. This is Mark Morano for TNT Radio and the Morano Minute.
Emergency, police, fire, ambulance.
Yeah, g'day, mate. Need an electrician.
Do you need police, fire, or ambulance?
No, I just need an electrician. I've got a couple old crappy power points I need to get changed over.
Look, I'm sorry. I can only connect to the police, fire, or ambulance.
Well, I need to talk to an electrician.
This is for emergencies only.
This is an emergency. I'm moving into the house and I need to get an electrician to change these power points.
000's sole job is to connect you to your nearest emergency service. So please, stay relevant and save 000 for urgent assistance only.
What the heck are you even talking about?
Freedom of speech. Freedom of movement. Freedom of choice. Freedom of assembly. Freedom of health. Our freedom.
The voice of freedom
is TNT Radio.
And my guest is Brian McWilliams. Now, once the stuff of science fiction, that lab-grown meat could become reality in some restaurants in the US, probably in the next couple of months. I'm wondering if it's coming to a restaurant near you. I'll play this.
This chicken breast, grown in a lab using real animal cells, could appear in U.S. restaurants as soon as 2023. It's made by a California-based company called Upside Foods. The cultivated chicken was deemed safe for human consumption in a landmark decision by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration.
Well, it is meat, so it is chicken. It'll taste exactly as you would expect a chicken to taste.
Lab-grown meats derived from a small sample of cells collected from livestock, which is then fed nutrients, grown in enormous steel vessels called bioreactors, and processed into something that looks and tastes like a real cut of meat. Upside Foods CEO Uma Valetti explains.
Like I said, it's not a meat alternative. It's meat that's grown from real animal cells. So what we do is we take really high quality animal cells from, like, say, a cow or a pig or a chicken or a lobster, and we look for cells that can continue to grow outside the animal in a very robust and a healthy way. The part that's remarkable about it is we didn't have to raise and slaughter a chicken to get real chicken meat out of it.
Just one country, Singapore, has so far approved lab-grown meat for retail sale. But the United States is poised to follow. Upside worked with the FDA for 4 years before receiving the agency's green light in November 2022. There's also the ick factor to contend with. A study in 2022 published in the Journal of Environmental Psychology found that 35% of meat eaters and 55% of vegetarians would be too disgusted to try cultivated meat. Cultivated meat companies will need to convince reluctant consumers to give it a go, despite the initial high cost, likely by highlighting the fact that their products don't involve slaughtering animals. Another draw is that growing meat in a steel vessel instead of in a field could reduce the environmental impact from livestock, which are responsible for about 15% of the world's greenhouse gas emissions.
That's the unmistakable pioneering advantage of this field, because we're offering the choice to continue to eat real meat without giving it up or trying to become a vegetarian or a vegan.
So there you are. That's the fake chicken. Would you have fake chicken?
You know, honestly, I think I would. Maybe this is just because I expected this to happen eventually. You know, so I guess it was an inevitability. I've had it in my mind that, look, I'll try anything once. I'll tell you that. I'll try anything once. If it tastes okay, all right. I mean, to me, the bigger worry, of course, is how this is going to roll down the pipeline. And once this is established in the market, then are they going to outlaw the real thing and make it so exponentially expensive to produce and to, you know, get through the marketplace that it's going to be unattainable for the average person? So that worries me, but I'll give it a shot. I'll give it a try. You know, throw a little sauce on it. Why not? A hot dog can't be worse. You know, that's all lips and you know what's, as they say.
Thanks. Actually, I wish you hadn't told me that. I like to block those things out because I like a good hot dog with mustard and some ketchup. But
me too.
The chicken, I mean, I think chicken should have had feathers before you eat it. And if it hasn't got feathers, don't eat it, because the thought of them creating this, I think it's a monstrosity. That's what I think. And I think the ick factor will play a major part. But you're right about government. They certainly do want to. They want to curtail the livestock and stuff. I mean, New Zealand, they've got an emissions tax. They want to stop the sheep and cattle from farting. And you got all these great, like Bill Gates, buying up land all over the world along with other people and just getting rid of all the animals. And so you think, well,
that's exactly right.
But could you imagine going to a McDonald's? I mean, the other thing is, too, we got one of our news guys, James O'Neill, has done this little story for us about what they're doing in Texas.
Thanks, Mike. According to sources, the Barnsdall Ranch has decided to go green, exchanging their massive herd of beef cows for a herd of more environmentally friendly and delicious crickets. Several witnesses were on the scene as they took their crickets out to graze in a nearby field. Ranch hand Tommy Tushers: "Yeah, we reckon it was time to do our part for Mother Earth and our old partner Bill Gates and get rid of them there methane-spitting cows for good. I was a real good cowboy, but wrangling crickets ain't easy, I'll tell you what." The ranch currently has 15 cowboys on staff, most of which stayed on after the change to become professional cricket boys. Insiders report it has been a challenge, as crickets aren't easy to lasso, and most horses don't have good cricket sense to know how to behave around a swarm of prime crickets. Snart Kligville, the owner of the ranch and an executive at BlackRock: "We look forward to all of America gratefully adopting their delicious new bug diet. Get along, little land shrimps! Yeehaw!" At publishing time, the ranch confirmed they had retained a private stash of prime Angus beef for Bill Gates' all-burger diet. Back to you, Mike.
So there you are. Not real, but it could be.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me.
Robin Williams had a comment. And I would describe the horses there all trying to round up crickets. He said he described his horse as, or someone like a horse, a psychotic horse riding through a burning stable. And I pictured the same thing because, I mean, if you were to go, and they are pushing the insect bit. What they aren't telling you, though, about insects is that they also carry diseases. And so, I mean, the question is, how do you get rid of those diseases? And I mean, would you eat a cricket burger? Don't say yes.
No, I draw the line. Yeah, I draw the line at the cricket burger. And you have to order. Okay, if you know, we're talking about the origins of COVID. Did it come from a bat? Did it come from a raccoon dog? Now we got crickets in the mix. Who's to say where the next next pandemic is going to come up from out of this? But no, I would never in a million years try a cricket burger. That to me is it. We're getting into Soylent Green territory, I guess. You know, not quite there, but that's a step too far for me to get into it. I think, you know, maybe if you slather anything in enough cheese, it'll probably be okay, but I still can't trust it.
Yeah, same here. I think I like things like chicken that's had feathers before. I like something to eat, like a burger that's had hoofs before. And I always feel sorry for the animal because, I mean, you don't want to be liked in that way. You want to be, you know, like tasty or delicious. You want them to just like you. But I do feel that I think we're going down the wrong track. I think we somehow, I mean, and do we have any choice? Do you have any choice coming down this track? I don't think we do.
That's what it seems to me as well. It seems that there's a definitive movement that's going forward here. And, you know, not only attacking farmers, farming, the entire concept of meat eating as a way to survive is coming under attack. And, you know, that's where I look very skeptically at the climate movement. You know, to me, and I, we don't have to go down this path too far, but to me, there still isn't very much evidence to definitively say that one thing or the other is causing the decline of planet or shall lead to its end, or at least the end of humanity. And I believe wholeheartedly that we can overcome, you know, we shall overcome. But the move to attack this, to replace it with these alternative sources is just beyond confusing to the average person. I don't think I honestly don't think the average person is going to go along and say, yes, I'll gladly eat crickets. But also, from a flavor profile perspective, you know, we're talking about the chicken in vats, you're talking about crickets. I don't know what you're going to add to it to make it taste decent. I mean, does it have fat content? You know, can you get Wagyu crickets? Is that a thing?
I don't know. But imagine the fly spray manufacturers would be making a fortune. Instead of going out hunting with your shotgun, you go out there with your fly spray. Collect a dozen crickets or cockroaches or blowflies.
I doubt you've got this commercial in Australia, but in the U.S. there is a commercial that runs, and it is for the bug assault, it's called. And it is a shotgun that shoots rock salt, and you take down bugs with it, and that you just preach the future. This is what you're going to see on the Outdoor Channel. This is what the hunting competitions are going to be in the future. You nailed it.
Yeah, I'm just, I'll play one more. Here's one more grab that I've collected for us. It's all about COVID. You know, when you fly, people say, I wonder where the waste goes. Maybe this will explain that.
Well, the U.S. is now turning to airplanes to track potential COVID variants. Specifically, we're talking about waste on airplanes. The CDC says it's talking to airlines about the possibility of testing wastewater from flights for coronavirus. NBC News health reporter Aria Bendix joins us now with more. She's been looking into this. So, Aria, first, how does the CDC currently use wastewater to track for and monitor COVID?
Mm-hmm. So CDC has been looking for COVID in our wastewater from our homes and buildings since about September 2020. Now, that isn't happening everywhere. It's only happening about 1,250 sites nationwide. So they're looking to expand that in the future. But this new idea of testing for wastewater in airplanes and airports is really interesting. It could provide us with a whole unique set of data about where new variants are coming into the U.S. and then where they came from originally based off of where planes land and take off.
So, you know, what's the long game here? I mean, how useful do scientists believe testing wastewater is going to be when it comes to preventing another pandemic?
Mm-hmm. So there was actually a report last week from the National Academies that looked at that very question. They found it was a critical tool for spotting new viruses and bacteria. And so it's going to be really important moving forward that we expand those efforts. That was part of the report. We know that about 80% of homes are actually connected to a sewer system. So it's actually one of our largest databases about the health information of hundreds of millions of people, and it will give us a sense of how widely something is spreading.
Yeah, so if you can see it coming, you can head it off and maybe prevent it from actually being as bad as what we've been seeing. Scientists have said that testing the wastewater is not going to actually identify every possible pathogen that could be a threat, right? So what wouldn't it identify?
Yeah, I mean, to your point, Aaron, if you don't know what you're looking for, you won't know what to find. Yeah. And so that's might be the case if we see a completely novel virus that we've never been introduced to the human population before.
So there you are. If you don't know what you're looking for, you don't know what you'll find. What would you be looking for in a waste receptacle in a plane? I'd be looking for a pig.
I think what I'd be looking for is probably lost wallets, rings people drop. They wouldn't be looking for any viral things. They're looking for something that could directly profit me. But, you know, I got to say, this story, while it is bizarre and off-putting, gives me a little bit of pleasure. Because the thought of government stooges having to go through my waste and that of all my other citizens around me gives me such joy.
Funny.
I mean, if they got to get it, if they're going to get it some way, that is the way I'd prefer they get it.
You know, Brian, it's a shitty job, but somebody's got to do it. Brian McWilliams, thank you very much. Producer of Mean Age Daydream, thank you very much. Must do it again very shortly. This is TNT Radio.